It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. It's hard to believe, Pirate Nation, but first pitch for 20th-ranked East Carolina is just 3 days away as the Pirates will begin year six of the Cliff Godwin era on Friday afternoon when they host William & Mary in game one of the three-game series at Clark LeClair Stadium. Later in the week, we will catch up with the seventh-year head coach of the Tribe, Brian Murphy, but right now we will get the East Carolina perspective as we caught up with the fifth-year play-by-play voice of the Pirates, Corey Glore, on Sunday evening, and let's go to that conversation with him right now.
Well, being baseball season, Bubba and Kyle, this next gentleman is a regular on the show. I'm glad to have him back, right, Bubba?
Yeah, Corey Glore, the play-by-play voice now. Corey, what year are you entering now?
This would be season five behind the mic for baseball.
Okay. I thought it was fifth because your debut was, of course, the Super Regional team was 2016.
Yes, it was. So a pretty wild up and down year that had a pretty wild up and down finish. Yes, that was my first year. It kind of threw me right into the fire here. And since then, they've been continuously knocking on the door here of doing something very similar to that.
Is that a record for the most consecutive seasons for a play-by-play voice of baseball? That's got to be close to a record, guys.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is.
I cannot confirm or deny. I know some about those who preceded me, but I don't know the longevity of some folks in the baseball booth. I know Jeff did it for a while, whenever basketball would end. But I don't know how long he picked that up. And
Jeff did it coming and going, Corey. He would take over for other people. If it's not you, then it's got to be – guys, let's go way back in the Wayback Machine before it was IMG when it was on Pirate Radio 1250, that Josh guy that did it. Who was that?
Yeah, oh, I know. It was Josh Spence. And Josh Spence did, and he had a program, I think. He worked with Pirate Radio, or at least he did that for Pirate Radio, and I think he had another show as well.
Boy, I tell you what, not speaking ill of Josh, nice guy, but he was terrible when he first started.
Well, yeah, he had a good voice. He just didn't understand the game.
He had a great voice for it.
But
that's kind of important. But speaking of which, Corey knows a lot about the game, and I know you got to be tickled to death to the off season quote unquote is almost over, and Friday is William & Mary. How do you feel about the team? You've had a chance to see inter squad the scrimmages and everything in preseason. What do you think about the Pirates, as we are a few days away from the start of the 2020 season.
Yeah, for me, frankly, the off season feels like it's done. Now that we're in game week, and now it's kind of back to the grind of getting ready for a weekend series and really gearing up for this. I'm thrilled that it's finally here and being able to see this team pretty regularly now over the last few weeks in the preseason scrimmages, and not just seeing, you know, what some of the plans might be to start off the year on Friday, but also getting to know some of these guys and getting to reacclimate myself with some of the veterans. I think that you're in store for something really special again with this group. They're a deep team. They're a versatile team. And they're a team now that, even with so many new pieces to the puzzle, you seem to have a grasp of what everyone's role might be here in the early on. It could shift, and things will already shift right off the bat with an injury or two creeping in. But you have an understanding that there are 36 guys in this roster, and they all seem to have a pretty firm grasp of what's required of them to do right now.
As far as one of the new changes, obviously, this year would be a pitching coach, Jason Dietrich. What do you think about him? Have you had a chance to talk to him, to meet him?
Yeah, I've chatted with him a little bit. He's a very laid-back guy. I've been told by many a pitcher, though, he'll get on you very quickly, and it's very similar to what you hear from other coaches and the staff. But by and large, he's a very cool customer that knows how to mold and adapt with a pitcher that he has, and not just the stuff that a guy might possess, but also the type of guy he is. That's one of the biggest things I've heard here early on, is that he's been very impactful working individually with some of these guys, and getting to know them and how they operate, how they work. And so he's really kind of dove into a group of 20 pitchers that he has and worked with them all in slightly different ways, because everybody needs a little bit of a different approach, whether it's harnessing what you have on the hill or just being a person. Not everyone responds the same way to the same message. And that's what I've heard here early on, is that he's come into a place where he didn't bring any of these pitchers in, and he's gotten to learn and know them very quickly, not just as pitchers, but as people. And it's resonated pretty strongly.
You know, you're losing a guy like Jake Agnos, tremendous, say, just probably not only one of the best players in East Carolina history, but one of the best players in the history of the American Conference. And the stable was far from void. And so you got guys like Jake Kuchmaner, pitcher of the year, who threw a perfect game a season ago and nearly had another no-hitter against Ole Miss. And then you also have Alec Burleson and Gavin Williams, who is battling an injury right now that he may miss a start or two. But just talk about some of those arms that he has at his disposal.
I think this is, if you kind of take it on the surface, the best returning starting rotation that this team has had since I've been here, and that's even with the loss of Jake Agnos. You have four guys that are ready to roll with plenty of starting experience, or at least groomed to be starters heading into the season. I know Gavin Williams hasn't had a ton of starts under his belt in his 2 years, but that was the goal heading in. It was that he's going to be one of the guys in the weekend. That's going to be delayed here at the start a little bit with his injury. But when you have him with Jake Kuchmaner, with Alec Burleson, and with Tyler Smith, who has started more than any of those guys over the last couple of years, you have a quartet of pitchers returning, even in a season of a lot of turnover, that match up with anybody in this conference. And it's going to be hard to find another team in this league that can go 1, 2, 3, 4 as strong as this team can right out of the gate. There might be a strong 1, 2 out there. Houston always has a strong duo or trio ready to roll in a weekend. UConn usually grooms a good one. And Cincinnati's been pretty good at that of late. But 1, 2, 3, 4, in terms of a starting rotation, there's not much better than what East Carolina's got heading into the year.
Corey, who would you say would be the, as far as the midweek pitcher, would that be Tyler Smith would be more like a Sunday guy, right? Saturday or Sunday guy.
No, I think you're right in that. I think right now Tyler is being groomed for a Saturday or Sunday spot. He's been a great Sunday guy the last 2 years, and even with a bit of an up and down season last year, he still was 7-1 overall, and he kept his team in games. But then the key for him was getting deeper into games, and now he feels like he's better positioned to have longer outings during the course of a season. The injury to Gavin Williams here to start does throw a little bit of a wrinkle into things for at least this coming weekend, and then we'll see beyond that. But that does throw a little bit off kilter in terms of what the starting rotation might look like for opening weekend and then next Wednesday at Campbell. I mean, you guys have been around this team longer than I have, and what Cliff Godwin has done with midweek starters has varied from game to game. And usually he'll go Johnny Holstaff on those games, and I think you'll see that initially here to begin the year, because you have a ton of new guys. You have four JUCO pitchers coming in that I'm sure are kind of streamlined to get initial looks in some of these midweek starts and midweek offerings coming up starting next Wednesday. But it really feels like, as for the last couple of years, whoever starts in midweek going to be a roll of the dice here to begin these first couple of weeks. A lot will depend on how guys pitch in relief in the weekend, and that will probably steer some people towards higher leverage roles in midweek starts. But weekends, even with the Gavin injury, it kind of looks like you've got a Smith, a Cooch Maynard, and a Burleson as your three to start the weekend. We'll see if that changes between now and Friday. And then once next Wednesday hits, I think your guess is as good as anybody's as to who will get the ball in Bowie's Creek.
Corey, kind of piggybacking off the point you were making earlier as far as what we have returning and just talking about going around the league in terms of the pitching depth and just how the Pirates certainly have a lot at their disposal. Just I know they're picked anywhere from 20th to I'm throwing out the 36th in collegiate baseball, but the other four polls anywhere from like 20th to 25th in preseason pick to win the American. So that not only talks about what they've done in the past, but what Cliff Godwin and this staff have brought in on a consistent basis and just recruited at such a high level. So talk about some of those newcomers that we can expect to see making early contributions like a Zach Agnes.
Well, yeah, but before we go on, now where do the Pirates sit in your preseason poll, guys? Because I know everybody has a preseason poll. And
we haven't came up with ours yet, Corey, but ours would be just as official as anybody else's.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and say we're going to be the number one. The Sports Objective poll, we're the number one team in the country.
All right. So it's good to know. I've been trying to keep track of all of the preseason polls, and East Carolina seems to be on most of them. So I think that's a good sign, and good to know that they're on yours as well.
No, with the bullet.
Number one, and there are no number twos. It's just number one, and that's it. Yeah, I mean to actually get to your question, Bubba. I mean, what I think I've seen evolve over scrimmages in the preseason is that there are a number of guys that are coming in that have the potential to be two-way guys, and literally just going to what I've seen this past weekend from scrimmages, where I've seen Carson Wisenhunt, Skylar Brooks, Zach Agnos all pitch, as opposed to where we kind of expect them to be, which is in the corner infield somewhere. I think Agnos is the guy at third here to start, but he wrapped up the Sunday scrimmage, and so on the mound, I should say. And Skylar Brooks has thrown pretty well here in preseason. He's been kind of the biggest name to step out in the mix here in the spring. And Carson Wisenhunt showed a lot in the fall and had a pretty good spring as well, both at first, at third. He played a little outfield this past weekend, and then he was also throwing the ball on the hill. The biggest thing that stands out to me as we head into the year is that there seems to be just a ton of versatility from a lot of guys that they brought in. And these are all freshmen that we're talking about, those three. Not to mention the JUCO pitchers, like, who have all had really good flashes in the spring, Elijah Gill, Nick Logish, Parker Boyle. Those guys have really stepped up at really key points in the hill so far. There's a lot of options. And even if a guy's in the starting lineup at third or first, or even in the outfield somewhere here to start, don't write off potentially seeing them pitch here in the early going as well, because we entered the year knowing there'd be two guys that would go two ways, Alec Burleson, Ryder Giles. Now it seems to have developed that there's at least five, and we'll see if that presses on, if this team wants to rein back one or two of them, keep them off the hill or whatever the case might be. But there are a couple of guys to keep an eye on as the season gets underway in the first couple of weeks, because you may see them in a lot of different places.
Corey, you've seen scrimmages and you've seen BP. What kind of pop does this lineup have this year? Who's hitting with power?
I think there's a lot of potential pop right now. I think it's raw. It's not like fully groomed like we knew heading into last year it would be, when you had a Packard, when you had a Brickhouse, when you had a Washer all come in, and you knew the power they could provide because they flashed it pretty consistently in their career. This year, we know Alec Burleson has power. We know Seth Cadell has the power. Now he's going to get regular playing time, most likely, to really harness that. We know Bryson Worrell has probably the most power on this team right now, and we know that it's been 2 years of refinement for him. And by what I've seen, for all discussion that I've heard, it seems pretty well refined heading into the year for a guy like Bryson Worrell. But Carson Wisenhunt, Skylar Brooks, both have power to possess the two JUCO catchers that are behind Seth Cadell, Matt James and Ben Newton. They both have power as well. It's a lot of guys that I think have the potential to really be impactful in the power game for this lineup. We just haven't seen it because a lot of these guys haven't had a ton of playing time or are brand new to this lineup and to this program. But the potential is there to be as powerful as what we've seen over the last couple of years.
And, Corey, what about what looks to be our starter at first base, Thomas Francisco? Franny had an unbelievable summer up in Charlottesville.
Yeah, and as soon as I stopped answering in my head, I said I forgot Thomas Francisco. And what's been unique to see him over the spring is that he's bouncing around a couple of corner spots as well. He played a little bit of third last year, but usually came in at first base. The key with him has always been defensively, and if you can kind of have them out there late in games. You're right, he had a really impressive summer in collegiate ball. And you're bang on in that he does have the same type, but he has a Seth Cadell type raw power to him that if he gets regular reps, regular playing time, you'll probably see that come into the fold pretty strongly.
And we also the fact that, how about the fact that Burleson and he were picked as two of the top bats? I think Burleson was what, Bubba, 41st? And I think Francisco was like 94th. But those two are the two of the top 100 in the nation.
Well, and remember, you know, Alec Burleson's sophomore season at the plate, that was preceded by an unbelievable summer in collegiate ball. And that now it's kind of the same trajectory that we're seeing from Thomas Francisco, where, you know, after Alec's freshman year, where he didn't get a ton of regular time at the plate and was pretty inconsistent offensively, he exploded in summer ball, and he carried that into his sophomore year of college ball and then carried it into Team USA last year as well. And now Thomas Francisco, who was behind Spencer Brickhouse last year and didn't get a ton of playing time at third because Ryder Giles really grabbed that spot, he had his ups and downs at the plate, was getting on at a pretty decent clip, but power wasn't quite there as regularly as I think he was hoping for. And then he just let loose in summer ball. And so there's a very similar arc that's occurring right now with Alec Burleson and then a guy who's a year younger than him in the form of Thomas Francisco. I think that's a name, and I just lent to it, where he's being a little bit overlooked with some of these new guys coming in. And I forgot to mention him and this potential power this lineup has, but he's a very quiet guy that goes about his business, and he's a very big candidate to crack double-digit home runs pretty easily this year if he's the regular guy at first or third.
Corey, kind of taking a look around the horn, I know we've talked a lot of the infield positions, obviously Cadell behind the plate, Agnos at third, Giles at short, and then I guess what Norby at second and Francisco at first. But then taking a look at the outfield, you have a guy like Bryson Worrell, who we've already mentioned, but Lane Hoover is a guy that last year when his bat was out of the lineup, and you could really see an impact, and that's something that Cliff talked about in his media day remarks, just how his absence from the lineup was something that the team had to get used to. He hit close to 330 as a freshman, and he just found a way to get on base. He only struck out 15 times while walking nearly 30.
Yeah, this guy is just a hit machine. He finds his way to do it, and an unsung hero of last year's offensive attack. And this year heading in for a team that, at least on paper right now, doesn't have the returning power that it did a season ago, finding ways to get on base and put some action going on the base paths. This is Lane Hoover's game. This is the style that he brings to the table. When I was at the scrimmage Sunday, guys, he had one of the strangest push-slash-bunts. It's hard to even characterize. It was almost a three-quarter swing in which he just popped it up softly behind the mound and dropped it in for a base hit. And what was an absolutely devastating slider from A.J. Wilson, one of the new guys. And he just finds a way to make contact and get on base. And little things like that just kind of showcase what he's capable of doing. We'll see where he's going to start defensively. I think the plan was for him to be in right field to begin the year. A lot of this, there's a bit of a domino effect with Gavin Williams' injury where, you know, you might shift Burleson to first base now if he's going to be a starting pitcher this weekend instead of where he was probably going to be in left field, and that's going to change some things in the outfield. We'll see what materializes between now and opening day, but he's definitely a starting outfielder, whether it's right, left, or center. And having him at the top of your lineup, a one or two in your lineup, he was in the two-hole last year, he is just as important to this team as any of these names that we're talking about, whether they're returning or new, because his ability to get on base and his defensive ability, his ability to track things down in whatever outfield you put him in, is close to irreplaceable. And you mentioned it. We saw last year when he was out with that collarbone injury, it was hard to replace, especially offensively. So he is absolutely vital to this team's success.
Talk about some other guys who can factor in the outfield. I know you talk about how guys performed well in summer ball. I think Christian Jane had a pretty good summer, and he has a left-handed bat. So him, I know newcomer from Pitt Community College, Trevor Lazito, and some others.
Yeah, Christian Jane, I mean, the guy needs to be put in bubble wrap. He's going to get beat up a little bit in spring. He's fine and ready to go, but it seems like he's always getting, like, hitting the ribs with a pickoff or something like that. He was dealing with a bit of a hamstring pull in spring as well. This guy can be an extremely valuable weapon to this team. We saw it almost solely in the pinch running scenario last year. He had a lot of struggles getting on base, but he would replace guys on base and come in defensively in the outfield. This is an extremely fast guy with the ability to hit gap to gap. And we'll see where the playing time comes for him in his sophomore year. I think there's a makeup to him that I think's untapped right now, that if he can find a way into the lineup, you're going to see it unlocked from this guy. Trevor Lucido, you're right. This is another one that I think it was a name that was pretty highly touted heading in because of his ties to the area, being at Pitt, and then kind of got a little bit overshadowed, especially lately in spring. He's had a really nice impact, especially defensively in the outfield. He's been getting on a decent pace as well. It's a guy not to get overlooked in an outfield that might be shifting a little bit here at the start of the season. So Trevor Lucido's a guy to keep an eye on. And then we talk a ton about Bryson Wuerl. I think to the point where the easiest thing to say about Bryson Wuerl is that we talk a ton about him. I mean, we know what he can do. We've seen it in flashes over his first 2 years. And wherever he is in the outfield, center, left, wherever he might be, he's a five-tool guy, but no bones about it. And it's whether or not he's got it all together. And it certainly seems like from talking to him, from talking to people around the program, and from seeing him, if he's not there, he's very close to putting it all together.
Corey, kind of shifting over to the bullpen, in the past, and you've had guys like a Davis Kirkpatrick or Sam Lanier come off an injury and pitch very well the next year. Talk about Matt Bridges. Have you seen him pitch any this spring?
He just pitched in the last scrimmage on Sunday. That slider looked like its old self. Like, it truly did. I'm not mincing words when I say his fastball was in the high 80s. We know in his freshman year he could get it to 91, 92, and I think it's possible we could get there again with that. But that slider, that was 73, 74 with some really sharp bite to it. I was standing in the dugout while he was pitching on Sunday, and just the murmurs from some of the guys in there saying how filthy that thing was and how hard it was to see, and how much it drops away off the plate. It felt like the old Matt Bridges that was apparent before he had that injury 2 years ago. It's crazy that it's been nearly 2 years since we've seen this guy throw. And people bounce back and react from Tommy John surgery very differently, but you're right. This team has had a track record of late of kind of refining and revitalizing guys working their way back from that injury. Davis Kirkpatrick, Evan Volova, and now hopefully Matt Bridges will be the next in that line. But he looked very, very good at spring.
Yes, Evan Volova, that was the other name I was trying to think of. But you're right, when I think of Matt Bridges, I think of that 2016 freshman appearance that he had in that Super Regional, just the confidence that he had that night down in Lubbock.
Well, I think that's the capstone that people remember for Matt Bridges, and just the calm, cool, collected swagger that he had that night. But that entire freshman year, I mean, he and Sam Lanier, if you remember, in 2016, were absolute monsters, and they both had similar arsenals in terms of what they brought. And, in fact, they both had pretty similar career trajectories. They both battled injuries. They both had their ups and downs. And Lanier had an extremely great final year last year, and now just talking to Matt and being around him, he's pretty dang driven to have a similar season this year in his final year.
So talk about some of the I know you've mentioned some of those new pieces, and like a Carson Wisenhunt, but talk about some of the young arms or maybe even transfer arms that will play key roles this year, could potentially play key roles.
Yeah, I think potentially play key roles is the biggest thing, because we've seen this bullpen kind of shape and mold throughout the course of seasons under Coach Cliff Godwin here, and I would anticipate something similar here. A guy that's initially stood out in spring is C.J. Mayhew, a freshman from Shelby, which is where Matt Bridges came from, at Crest High School. He's very similar in stuff to a guy like Jay Kuchmaner. In fact, I was talking to him this past weekend, and I was like, this cat's a little bit of the same stuff as you. And he's like, you think? It looks very similar. With a fastball that it can actually get into the upper 80s. Kuchmaner usually sits in the mid-80s with that fastball, but he's got a change. He's got a curveball from that left arm slot. Very similar stuff and makeup to what Jay Kuchmaner brings to the table. I think what's fascinating to me about the bullpen, and in my mind this is the most interesting piece of this team heading into the year, is that we mentioned Matt Bridges as one of these veteran guys to keep an eye on. And if all is going according to plan, I think this team would want Alec Burleson to be their ninth inning guy. But there are a couple guys that have been on this team that are, I think, getting overlooked a little bit, and will probably get the first cracks here to be your back end of the bullpen guys. A guy like Cam Colmore, who had a pretty good year last year in his fifth and final year. A guy who stood out in spring, guys, to me is Garrett Saylor, the sophomore out of Winston-Salem. He's bulked up. He's added some more muscle, and there's a lot of life to what he brings in terms of his fastball. He's got a really good-looking slider right now. And he came on at the end of last year in a pretty good way. I would look for him to have a pretty strong sophomore season in whatever role he's going to be in. He's looked the part here in spring so far. Guys like Evan Odom, who was injured for a lot of spring but has looked good when he's finally gotten on the mound here. And I'll say this, one of the most impressive pitching performances I've seen in this preseason so far, it was Carter Spivey. You talk about a guy who really struggled his freshman year last year, but he was absolutely tying guys up with his changeup over the weekend. And there are a few guys on this team have said that his stuff is the trickiest to figure out when he is on. And he looked on this spring. So we'll see if there are big things around the horizon here for a guy like Carter Spivey, who I'm sure you talk to him, but desperately wants a bounce back here from what he had last year.
Corey, as we look ahead at the weather forecast, it's going to be 75 degrees Thursday. Of course, 24 hours later, Friday, as we play William & Mary, it's going to be 45. So does that surprise you any?
I'm seeing slightly different from my weather forecast. I'm seeing rain here in the midweek and then like mid-50s on Friday. So
I got 45 on mine here.
All right. Well, I'm going to check while we talk here. Yes, I'm keeping – I got 52 now on Friday. And I do have 70 on Thursday, but rain. So I will take 52 and no rain.
We must be using different
time of the year.
Yeah. But maybe it'll be 52. Well, what do you? Speaking of Friday, what can you tell us about the Tribe of William and Mary? Have you done your research?
Yeah, I've done a little bit here and there. It's a team that the last time that we saw them, it was in postseason play. And since then, they haven't been back to the NCAA tournament. It's been much harder to do in the Colonial, as I don't think that needs to be terribly elaborated. It's a one-bid league, and they have struggled to find their way back to the top of that. They got a couple of returning pitchers in the rotation here. It looks like a senior is probably going to be their Friday guy. They did lose a couple of big bats in their lineup that they're seeking to replace right now. But it looks like they have a 1-2 locked into their weekend, barring any injuries that creep up during preseason. It's a team that I think for the Pirates, they are anxious to see a different color in the other dugout. I mean, they're sick of playing each other. And for these first few weeks of the season, even with some of the competition that looms on the horizon here in the early going this week, this stretch, these first 3-4 weeks of the year, are all about this team and all about East Carolina and gelling as a unit. Because if they do that, they're going to beat anybody and everybody that you throw at them on their schedule, whether it's William and Mary, whether it's Campbell, whether it's Ole Miss or Indiana. It doesn't matter. This is about them, not necessarily who's opposing them.
Yeah, you mentioned Ole Miss and Indiana. Great lineup for the Keith LeClair Classic this year.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I understand the focus and attention on Ole Miss and that game, and that being the Saturday game. And I would anticipate if the weather holds out, fingers crossed, that will be close to a sellout, if not a sellout, at Clark LeClair. But do not lose sight of the opener against Indiana. I mean, that's a perennial NCAA tournament team over the last few years. That is a high-quality program coming in, and I hope people realize that it's not just that Saturday matchup with Ole Miss that is worth your time and attention. Indiana on that Friday is very much worth your focus. So that's a great 1-2 to start the LeClair Classic. And then the final game is against a program that's been Achilles heel in this team for years now in High Point. This team has had weird issues with High Point. It's been a few years since these two teams have played. So that's a great 1-2-3 to really grab you here in the third weekend of the year. And I'll tell you this, Georgia Southern's a pretty good program coming in weekend two. So keep that in mind as well. That's a pretty decent Sun Belt program. So even though that name might not strike you right off the bat, that's going to be some high-quality ball coming up next weekend.
Yeah, speaking of Sun Belt, at some point I'd love to see us do a weekend series with Coastal. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. We never play those guys.
Yeah, I think you're preaching to the choir a little bit here. It would be mutually beneficial, I feel, to both programs. The thing about Coastal Carolina is that their first 4 weekends of the year, usually, they're hosting tournaments. And so they bring in really a bevy of teams. UConn is a pretty regular part of that mix. They usually go down to Conway one of those opening weekends of the year. They tell folks from the North and from the Midwest, come here for a tournament. The weather's going to be decent. We're on the beach, and you get to play at least us, a regular NCAA tournament high RPI team. And then right after that, Sun Belt play usually starts because that conference is more teams than the American. And so I doubt Coastal Carolina has much interest in wiping out one of those tournaments to set up a weekend with a team like East Carolina or even a team like, you know, South Carolina or Clemson. They get them on the schedule a little bit with midweeks, but there are opportunities around for a program like Coastal to really grab some headlines. And East Carolina is sitting right up here. A weekend between those two would make a ton of sense, even if you meet somewhere in the middle, like a Wilmington or a Fayetteville, and play in a minor league park.
Fayetteville's got a nice brand new park downtown. Let's do it.
They do. It's shiny and new. And I think that would be a really great hypothetical event
you could
for
do
college baseball fans on the coast. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. You're I've had these talks just kind of shooting the breeze around with other people. Getting Coastal on the schedule would be great. It takes two to tango when all is said and done.
Corey, before we take a look at the American very quickly, that's what I'm kind of piggybacking off what you're saying regarding Indiana, the way they've been able to keep it going over at least a couple coaching changes. I know they had a coach, was it Tracy Smith, go to Arizona State, and then obviously was it Chris Lemonis and down at Mississippi State now.
Yeah, I mean it's become kind of a launching pad for coaches to do really well and then go to warmer climates and to programs that probably get more money than a school like Indiana gives towards baseball, or really Big Ten schools give towards baseball. I mean, it is a powerhouse in the Midwest, and so to lure them, the Pirates and Jeff Palumbo puts the schedule together. They've been really good at usually getting a Big Ten team into the mix for this tournament. Ohio State's been a part of it. Maryland's been a part of it. And now you get Indiana, who's been one of the best programs in the Big Ten for the last few years. And you want to start the RPI talk now, getting a school from the Big Ten along with an SEC school to come in for a weekend, and you get to play them each once. Very helpful to that three-letter term that we all know and love.
Corey, taking a look at the American, I know last year you had clubs like Houston and USF who were down, and they had disappointing seasons. But talk about who you think the primary challengers are going to be.
Houston. They're the primary challenger. I will say this. Even though I think East Carolina is the best team in the league and should win this league as long as everybody stays healthy and everything goes according to plan here, 20-4 is going to be very hard to do again. The conference will catch up. That gap will squeeze back together, because last year was an aberration. To have this Pirates team steamroll this league like it did is extremely rare. And even though this team is high quality, I'm not anticipating a 20-win conference season again. It'd be great, and I think they're capable of it. But Houston is a team that just knows how to pitch every single time out. And then they have these Texas boys in the lineup that just hit the ball 5,000 feet. They have the returning rookie pitcher of the year in Devin Rudolph. And then you pair him up with a Clay Aguilar. You got a Lyle Lockhart who can go two ways as well. They have a pitching staff that can equal what East Carolina's has. They usually do. Last year they were pretty inconsistent offensively, and if they can sort that out, then it's going to come down to, like most years, the final weekend of the season again to determine a conference champion. And this is where, in an oddity, for the second time in 3 years, Houston doesn't play in conference in the final weekend of the year. And the last time they had that, they won the league. So this is a team that having them at home this year, as opposed to going to Schrader Park, where weird things have happened in that ballpark, to this Pirates team, very happy that Houston is coming to Greenville this year, because that's going to be, runs are going to be hard to come by in that weekend with what these two can throw out there on the mound.
One team that interests me, Wichita State, historically a great program, been down the last few years, bringing in a former Major League Baseball manager as their head coach. I'm going to be interested to see how that works out.
Yeah, I think the most prognostications I've seen have them eighth or ninth in the league. I think that's low for them. They do lose a good amount of talent. It was a pretty good offensive club, and this is a team that snuck into the conference tournament at eighth. Yeah. You bring in Eric Wedge, and he's never coached at the collegiate level. It will be important for him and important for that program on who he has around him. And he has no college coaching experience, but he brings Lauren Hibbs in, who leaves Charlotte after a couple of decades, and brings in a guy he played with in an alma mater of Wichita State who has had some success at UNCC to be on the bench with him. when you have a guy like that who, in any sport, who comes from the pro ranks and then jumps into college for the first time, the staff around him is key. And so getting a guy like Lauren Hibbs in, I think is pretty valuable to Eric Wedge. I think 6 or 7 is probably the right spot for Wichita State heading into the year. I think they're better than the basement, but they still have enough of a talent void, especially on the infield, that it's going to be tricky to get into the middle of the conference, even if there's an injection of life with a new coach there. And Eric Wedge has provided an injection there. They're waiting for a spark there. That community is as crazy about baseball as Greenville is. And they've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and now they kind of got it. I don't know if it will show up in the win-loss record as much this year, but give that 2 years, give that maybe even a full recruiting cycle, and you could see Wichita right back in the mix here atop this league.
Yeah, I fully expect them to be coming back, like you're saying, for sure. And that, with everything they have going for them, the new building, and I know that's something we discussed with you last year. After, I guess, the Pirates have been out there.
And let's just say, from the Pirates' perspective, thank goodness Clayton McGinnis has graduated. That is the senior that completely locked this team up, one like any pitcher I'd seen all season long. He got him twice, once in Wichita and once in the conference tournament on short rest. I think when Wichita comes to town, the Pirates will be very happy that Clayton McGinnis is not opposing them, because he was absolutely filthy against this team twice, and no one was able to do that to this team.
Corey, go ahead, Kyle.
I was just going to say, Clayton McGinnis was certainly a thorn in our side, no doubt about it. But, Kyle, go ahead. If you had a question about baseball, I was going to kind of transition and ask Corey, with him having been in Greenville, a question about basketball.
Well, go ahead with basketball, because mine wasn't baseball related. It was Corey related. So go ahead.
Okay.
Corey,
I know since you've been in town, you've had the opportunity to attend several basketball games. So what have you seen, both through your spectators, just being a spectator and also calling some games early in the season, about Joe Dooley's ball club and the development of the program?
Yeah, the team that I called games for in November, it's not the same team that I'm seeing now. That's a much more together group than when I was traveling around with them back in November. And you finally get the backcourt healthy, which I saw one game of in my time with them. And suddenly things fall into place the way that they're kind of hoping for, especially on the defensive end. I think this team plays a really tenacious defensive style, some really hard-nosed man-to-man defense that keeps them in all the games that we're seeing. They aren't winning all these games, and I know that is frustrating plenty of people, and it's frustrating Joe Dooley, but they've had a shot to win the vast majority of these conference games, whether it's tied at the half or they're pulling back late. That's because defensively, everyone seems to understand their role now on this team. And then when they get outside shots to fall, then you see what you saw Saturday in New Orleans, and you see a team that can put up 80 and then hold teams into the 60s and win games like that. That's been extremely hard to come by, though, consistency from the outside. It was great to see Tyree hit a 3 Saturday against Tulane. It has been a long time coming for him. J.J. Miles had a big game previously against Tulane. Tristan Newton's been great in the last two games, especially from the perimeter. If you can get those guys to be regular threats that opposition have to focus on defensively, then Jaden Gardner gets to run rampant down low. And he already is doing that, even when he's double-teamed or triple-teamed. The bounce that he has, his quick lateral movement when he's trapped under a basket, it's insane. It's hard to believe that he'll lose size battles against most everybody down low, and it hasn't mattered, because he can just maneuver around him. He can go 90 degrees quickly the other direction, and he has the speed and the agility to get to the rack in ways that that's really hard to fathom for a guy his size. But you get perimeter scoring on a somewhat consistent basis like you saw Saturday against Tulane. Then Jaden Gardner continues his double-doubles and puts up 20 and 10 on a regular basis. It's good to see this team performing on the floor at a level that I was expecting to see in November, and then injuries kind of push that aside right off the bat. The wins will come with how they're playing. It's a stick-with-it mentality, I think, for most people right now. And I would encourage people to stick with it, because if all goes according to plan, this team returns next year. And with the way they play defense and figuring out who the best outside threats are, this is going to be a pretty fun team and a winning team here very shortly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if you can keep these guys together and add a scorer next year, we'll see some sort of postseason play beyond the conference tournament. Corey, I wanted to ask you, as Bubba alluded to, about you beating Greenville down on a regular basis, how are you transitioning to be a full-time Greenville resident? Do you like it here? Is it a big change from Winston-Salem? Obviously, you were already used to the area, but now you're here full-time.
Yeah, I love it. I'm so happy to be out here now and to be around a place that I've been wanting to be a part of now for the last 4 years that I've been working with East Carolina baseball, to kind of be here in this city and experience the passion that people have for not just the school, not just the baseball program, but this community and this part of the state. There's a very big difference between East and Central North Carolina. There's a very strong amount of pride that exists out here about this place and about this region. And to be finally a part of it full time, and to be able to drive home after games instead of to a hotel or 3 hours west, I'm extremely happy for that. But to just kind of be around and to be able to talk to people when I'm out and about and talk about baseball, or talk about the school, or talk about life. It's been an absolute thrill for me. And now that we're into taking down to the start of baseball here very quickly, I can't imagine it's going to be even better than what it has been here since I moved in December.
Corey, I was going to ask you about barbecue. Have you had a chance to? Like Barbecue Row there, all the different barbecue places. Have you had any barbecue in Greenville?
Oh, Dave, I've had so much barbecue. here's
all you think of it, though, of course.
No, there's the thing, I'm not, because there are enough different ones here. There are enough places to try here, and I haven't gotten to all of them. When I first started working out here, and I would drive in, you could find me on Saturday late mornings, probably at Bee's Barbecue. Like after a Friday night game, and then make sure you get out there before they run out for lunch at Bee's. That's my primo barbecue.
There you go.
At Bee's Barbecue. I mean, it's the only place I've been in where if a gust of wind hits it really hard, it would be destroyed. And I love it because of that. But I live close to Sam Jones Barbecue now. And I was told and recommended to give it a try when I moved here, and I've been there repeatedly since. There's something about the fact that they still, like, leave the skin in the barbecue there. Oh, mercy, guys. It's about 15% of me now, Sam Jones Barbecue.
Yeah.
You got a Moore's Barbecue, which I haven't tried yet. There are a few other. Yeah, well, Parker's I've had before. I'm fine with it, but I think there are other options. Let me just put that as kindly as possible.
I agree with you. Do not advertise. So.
What about Bee's?
Well, he said Bee's to start with. That's his favorite.
Okay, I missed that.
Bee's is the best. Their sides lack. Like Sam Jones does beat it pretty heavily in terms of the side dish offerings.
Right. The best thing at Sam Jones is their baked beans.
Yes.
See,
yes.
I'm not a baked bean guy, but I love their mac and cheese, love their collards. And for Bee's, I love the fact that it's grilled chicken. That's the kicker for me as well. is that it's great barbecue with grilled chicken. Then you get the alcohol bottles filled with that sauce and just ladle it on everywhere. The coleslaw is good, but for me, just give me a half pound of that barbecue and a two-piece white of that grilled chicken, and give me a giant bourbon bottle of that barbecue sauce, and I'm a very happy man.
Corey, did you like Sam Jones? I mean, maybe you already know this. Maybe you've already checked it out.
Skylight Inn, right?
Skylight. Okay, you've already been there. All right.
I have not been there yet. I know it's a very short drive. I do need to make the trip down. But, yes, I am aware of the origin of Sam Jones. I know Skylight is kind of the mecca of it all.
Yep. Like you're saying, as far as bees is just, I don't know, I think bees is the cleanest. But what do you think as far as Brunswick stew? I didn't hear anything about Brunswick stew. Do you like it or not so much?
Can't say I've ever had it. I've been a little wary to try it. Yeah, I've never had Brunswick stew. I'm a little wary to try it. I won't lie.
Corey, I'm going to tell you my favorite place for Brunswick stew, and it's a place you've probably passed many times because there's several of them. Actually, Smithfield's Chicken and Barbecue.
Okay, well, I've had Smithfield's before, but I've never had the Brunswick stew.
I think the Brunswick stew is great. It's probably my favorite place for Brunswick stew, and they're all over. There's not one in Greenville. I think one in Goldsboro. I think there's one in Smith-Wilson, maybe.
Yeah, and you can get – there's plenty around Raleigh, around that area, too, that I have stopped at on that drive to or from Greenville before. I've always been a – I haven't tried it, and I'm willing to try it. Let's just put it that way.
Now, Corey, I think that
– Go ahead.
I was just saying I'm sure that hesitancy to try it is probably – is the appearance of it, because I was the same way. I'm trying to remember if it was in college or when I finally gave in and tried it. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I didn't try it before now, because I love it. Because anytime this time of year when it's 30, 40 degrees and, you know, cool tailgating for baseball and you have some Brunswick stew and hush puppies and good stuff.
See, I've had – my mom has made stew in the past back home in Illinois. I don't believe it's Brunswick stew. But it's a beef stew. It's like pot roast stew or whatever the case might be. It's not a very appetizing-looking dish. I'll put it that way.
All Brunswick stew is tomato base. Got a little vinegar in there for a little kick. Basically, that color is tomato vinegar and hot sauce. And then you got shredded chicken and pork in there, corn, butter beans, and maybe some peas, and that's pretty much all there is to it.
Okay, all right. The arm is being twisted. I will try it here. I can give that a go. I think I'm okay with that.
Corey, I wanted to ask you, obviously, with this season being brand new, and we're not going to put you on the spot, and we're not prepared this week, but will you continue to do movie lines with us for folks that maybe not know that? Can you explain what the movie line game is?
Yeah, this was back in, I want to say it was 2018 season. It was 2018. Josh Graham, who worked at 94.3 The Game and is now working in the Triad on sports radio there, he would give me random movie lines to work into the course of a broadcast as naturally as possible. And then fans would also chime in and give their options to him. And then he would relay them to me and I would do my best. And then Josh moved to Greensboro, as we've just alluded to. And then you guys picked that up last year and you would give me movie lines, usually loosely themed on the opponent we were playing in some capacity, or maybe the location that we were going. But then you guys picked the reins up and would give me movie lines as well. And I would do my best to work those into the fold. And that, it was also Spencer Brickhouse also would contribute a movie line to me each and every game. As the season went along, but you guys took the mantle from Josh Graham and yet to relinquish it. So I am absolutely ready for 2020.
What would you do? What would you do for William and Mary if we're going to go themed? That's the Williamsburg. What would we do? Lines from Pocahontas?
I mean, you have to get some old school lines in there for sure. Like go watch the John Adams miniseries or something like that. Or yeah.
All right. Well, unless any of you got anything from Pocahontas or anything like that, I don't have anything. Directly related to William and Mary.
We'll definitely have to think about that, and we have several days now before we have to come up with it, right? Before we can.
You don't have until Friday at 4 o'clock.
Yeah,
not very long.
That was like a deadline.
Do have a firm deadline. It is Friday at 4. But there is space between then and now to send me your movie lines. And by all means, if your listenership out there wants to send any to me, do so on the Twitter, where I'm pretty active there, and I will happily add those to the list.
And where do they tweet you at, Corey? What's your handle?
That would be at Corey Glor. That's a Corey and then a GLOOR. Corey Glor.
All right.
Bubba and I were discussing lines from Ferris Bueller the other day. Maybe we'll throw some of those at you.
Oh,
that is
awesome.
A fantastic movie. That last monologue is a little lengthy, but I mean, if you don't slow down, you might miss it. Like it's already a baseball line right there. I could work that in.
And if we have a rain delay, Corey, then you could definitely do it, right?
Dave, we're never going to have a rain delay. And okay. I can't believe you would ever say that. There are no rain delays coming this year. We're not going to have 8 doubleheaders like we did last season. The weather will be picture perfect from game 1 to game 56 and all the way to the postseason.
We kicked ass and took names in doubleheaders, Corey.
Yes, we did. It was 7-1, and all 7 were sweeps, I believe was the mark. And that will include the Campbell Regional doubleheader, if you want to get really specific about it. That was technically a doubleheader in the scope of the word, even though it was for many things on the line, and they took both teams in that one. So, yes, it was impressive. Let's hope it never has to be done again.
And no trips to Louisville in a super regional, or a Corey, where you have to call the game?
Nothing but rain falling into my booth at Louisville. I can't wait to go back there the next opportunity.
Before we let you go, one more question because you've been generous with your time. Where do you see this team? I know you don't have you're not a prognosticator like the great folks that we were talking about earlier, but the polls. Do you see this team going back to a super regional? Are we going to host a super regional? What do you think?
I mean, I think the number was 47 last year when they added all up. With the 4 wins in the regional. So 42 in the regular season, 5 in postseason. 42 regular season wins is attainable this year. I have no doubt about that. I think you kind of alluded to it at the very start here, Dave, where people might be a little bit concerned heading into a year like this because literally half the roster is brand new. But what I've been trying to kind of get across to people from what I've seen, just seeing this team up close, they're replacing 7 draft picks and a couple of seniors on top of that with some high talent guys coming in, whether they're JUCO or freshmen. These are guys that aren't being asked to do more than they're capable of to fill the voids of a Bryant Packard or a Jake Agnos or a Spencer Brickhouse or the youngster in the background right there. They're being asked to be them, and if they're them, this team's really damn good. No question about it. 42 wins in the regular season will be tricky to get, but it's attainable with what this team has compiled together and what this program has built over the last few years. And from that point on, it's a crapshoot as to how the postseason navigates itself: regional, super regional, World Series. However the case might be, this team has the pieces to do it all. Weird things happen when you get to that time of year. And so will all that happen? I have no idea. Will 40 wins, 42 wins happen? I have no idea. But this team certainly has the makeup to go that far.
Well, we obviously have a long time to get there. It'll be fast, I'm sure, but I can't wait. It'll be interesting to see what happens this year. But, Corey, man, appreciate you so much, and you were good to us. You've been good to us the last two seasons, and looking forward to Hard to Believe the third season working with you again.
Yeah, gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. It is here, and it's extremely exciting. My last bit of advice to everyone out there is, as the season starts here, my general rule of thumb is give a team about 15 games to really sort itself out as to what it is, especially this year when you have a lot of new faces to this puzzle. And once you get into the, you know, the early part of March to the middle of March, when conference play starts picking up, this team will have its bearings straight, will have its foundation set. It's going to be fun to see how they develop to start the year, and then once conference play hits, how they look and what they are truly as a unit. Because 56 games is a lot of games, but it does, as you mentioned, go by faster than you think. So enjoy the ride this year, because I think it's going to be one worth enjoying.
Yeah, don't blink. Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate you so much.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure, and I will be talking to you many times here over the course of the season.
That was the play-by-play voice of East Carolina Pirate Baseball, Corey Glore. As always, we appreciate Corey coming on the show and providing his excellent insight, and look forward to having him back on periodically throughout the 2020 season. Pirate Nation, tomorrow you will hear from former ECU head coach and current UNCG boss, Billy Godwin, and we will also catch up with Kelly Hines of the Tulsa World as we preview tomorrow's men's basketball game against the Golden Hurricane as the Pirates look to avenge their 16-point home loss against Frank Hayes' club back in mid-January. Remember, you can hear the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. Google Play Music, TuneIn, SoundCloud, you name it, you can probably find us there. Follow us on social media, on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We appreciate you listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Go Pirates!
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.